you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 143 of The Law Entrepreneur. As always, I'm Neil Tyra, your host today. And my guest is Jessica Markham. Jessica is the owner of a lovely family law firm here in the local area. And I first actually came across her as a result of reading an article that she wrote. She also writes for the Daily Record, a local legal publication here. In a column called Generation JD, she wrote an article called Culture Eats Strategy for Breakfast. And it really resonated with me, as we'll talk about in the show. And I reached out to see whether or not she'd be interested to be on the program. And I was delighted that she did. So it's a kind of an interesting take about how the idea of developing a culture in your office, both for your employees and for clients, is really a key to developing a strong practice. And I think there's no better example than what she's doing at her firm. And I wanted to hear it firsthand from her. So without any delay, here's Jessica Markham. Jessica Markham, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it is a pleasure to have you on with us today. Jessica, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
So I'm a family law attorney in private practice in Bethesda, which is outside Washington, D.C. The majority of my practice is devoted to litigation, but I'm also a mediator, which I love. I have five attorneys in total. I started the firm in 2015, and it was just me, and then added one more. And now I have an eighth person in total starting next week.
Wow. That's pretty spectacular growth.
I mean, you know, I must say, when I started my firm, I'm not going to say I did it on a whim, but I would say if you'd asked me a year earlier if I would be starting a firm in 2015, I would have said, I don't know about that. That doesn't sound likely. And then I'd been practicing 10 years and I felt like I was ready for a new challenge, and something about entrepreneurship always appealed to me. And I sort of started the firm to have just another challenge. I love litigation because it's always a challenge. It's always ever changing. There's always a lot to learn and skills to hone. But after 10 years, I felt like I was ready for one more challenge. So I started the firm because I wanted that challenge, and I wanted to have, you know, a good job for myself.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if it would just be me. And I worried that it really would just be me in an office. I got a little office to start, 644 square feet.
That's little.
Yeah. And I'm a people person and I like to chat and run things by people. And I was excited, but I was worried that it would just be me, that I would be lonely, that I would have like a, you know, drib drab of clients, and that it would be kind of a lonely existence.
In other words, the standard lifestyle of lots of solo practitioners, included, when I first started, that really kind of defined, you know, where I was. So I can relate to that.
Yeah. So I was really hesitant, and I was so busy when I started. I was busy before I started the firm that I right away hired a friend who's an attorney to help me on a part-time basis. And we were so busy that she added hours and she added hours. And then I called my old law clerk, who I adore, And I said, where are you? What are you doing? Are you too busy in law school? Or can you get your butt down here and help me prep for my next trial? And then after about a month, we were all so busy that I hired somebody to help me run the office and answer the phones because the remote phone service that I was using just wasn't enough coverage for me. And I felt that I was spending too much time doing admin. And then I kind of kept adding until I got to where I am. I just slowly added one every so often. And
so are you shoehorning all those eight folks into that 644 square foot office, or have you moved?
I am not. But although there was a lot of let me just say, there were a lot of us in the 644 for a little while. So yeah. there was the reception area by the front window, and it was a nice little layout, but it was one reception office, and it was a cozy little nook over by the copier. And then there was a conference room and an office. And at one point, for a short period of time, there were like five of us in that area. Wow. And I would look around and I go, I love you ladies, but if I have to hear one more person's phone conversation, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Exactly. So let's roll back a little bit. So you were in with another firm for 10 years, big law, medium law, small practice.
I was at what I would refer to as a boutique family law firm just down the street, similar size to what I have now. And I was there for the entire 10 years. I started there the Monday after I took the bar exam, and I was there 10 years to the day by accident. I mean, I couldn't have planned August 7th to August 7th if I had tried. And I became a junior partner, however you want to call it, after about 6 or 7 years. And I was so comfortable there. I could have just stayed, but my mom says that I always have my next harebrained scheme and I always have to be working on something. And I just kind of wanted I wanted to throw a little more craziness into the mix.
Your life wasn't disruptive enough. You had to add a little more, but I think that's really kind of a hallmark of entrepreneurs. They're always itching to, try and create something more, create something better, or do something differently. And, without that kind of entrepreneurial spirit, we'd all be stagnant. Now, when you were in law school, was family law always your objective, or did you know what you were going to do when you came out of law school, or did it just kind of fall into place?
I did not. The job market was very different in 05, and I was not, a top student, but I sent out my resume all over town and I knew I wanted to litigate. And so I was open to anything that would have me in a courtroom. And I decided that I would take a job at the best firm that I could, wherever that may be. And so I considered a bunch of different kinds of law, and I never considered family law. And I got the offer at my previous firm, which is a top family law firm in the area. And it was my best available opportunity. And I told them I had concerns about family law and that I really didn't know much about it. I didn't even take it in law school. Well, let me revise that statement. Feels like I didn't take it because I didn't really go to that class. I had two jobs my last semester of law school, and I didn't really go much. And I would say I passed it, but I didn't really learn much in it. So it wasn't anything that I ever focused on. And they assured me that they thought that I had the correct disposition to do family law and that I would enjoy it. And it turned out they were right.
Yeah, I will think as a family law attorney and knowing a whole bunch of them, most will tell you that, family law classes in law school were interesting and educational and informative, but they really don't prep you for the actual practice, the nuts and bolts of the practice of law. So it seems to be a good fit. Now, you said your mom kind of had this insight about you in terms of, harebrained ideas, but you didn't know where the entrepreneurial spirit came from. Is there entrepreneurship in your family, or did somebody else inspire you?
That's really interesting. And nobody's ever asked me that exact question, and I like that question. But I wrote something down that you just said earlier that I really thought resonated with me. You said a need to create something. Mm-hmm. And I feel that, well, Barbara Corcoran is a real estate mogul in Manhattan, and I really like her. She's on Shark Tank, and she has a podcast to listen to, in addition to your podcast, of course.
Well, thank you.
And she said something recently in one of her podcasts that said, you know, she wasn't driven by money. She wasn't driven by, you know, the need for fame or notoriety or whatever. She said she was driven by a curiosity to see how far she could get. And I think it's probably with me equal parts curiosity to see how far I can get, but more from an intellectual perspective of, you know, let's try this out and see how this experiment goes. And also the desire to create something, because I view my role as an employer as I'm creating jobs for people. And I take pride in the fact that I think I have created a place where people like going to work. And I think when you're happy at work, you know, you tend to be happier in your life. You tend to be fulfilled and, you know, have a sense of purpose. And if I can have a role in helping somebody provide for their family and feel fulfilled and like getting up in the morning and like going to work every day, then that makes me feel really, really good that I created something that wasn't there before.
Well, I want to come back to that point because it's very central to one of the reasons that I reached out to you to have you on the program, but I don't want to quite go there yet because there was a question hanging in the air that I can hear the audience saying, Neil, you know, she's talked about all this explosive growth from the day she opened the front door. Have her tell us where all those clients fell off the tree and into her office. How did that happen?
It's so interesting. I was at a holiday party a couple of days ago, and another attorney in the area asked me, where do you do your marketing or something like that? But the way he said it made me know that he was referring to advertising or SEO or, you know, the more traditional ways to market yourself. Mm-hmm. And I don't really, I just don't do those kinds of things. So I've actually never advertised in a traditional sense. I've never done search engine optimization. I have never placed an ad up until just recently. I put a teeny tiny ad to advertise one of my services, which is I work with attorneys. They retain me to prepare qualified domestic relations orders. So this small area of my practice really does come from attorney referrals. And everybody had kept saying, I didn't know you do that. I didn't know you do that. Why didn't you tell me you did that? And I said, well, let me just tell everybody all at once real quick here. Yeah. But I don't do those typical kinds of marketing because I think it's been done. There's so much of it out there that I would be throwing, you know, just more of the same out into the ether. So, I mean, let me just say, I don't have any business training. I was an English major and a politics major, so I don't. I think I operate a lot just going on gut, and I think my instinct is pretty good for some of this stuff. And I try and think about, well, if I were looking for an attorney, what would I do? I think the number one thing I really believe in is client service. And a big part of that is making sure that somebody feels heard and they feel that we're available and they feel that somebody always returns their call or email within 24 hours. And so at my firm, I introduce almost every client to another attorney in addition to myself, or if there's, you know, another set of attorneys working on a case, because there's so many emergency matters. I want everybody to feel that they've been attended to. I want the experience when they come into my office to be a pleasant experience. I think my support staff and the people that are the first face and voice that a client interacts with, I think their role is extremely important. I get tremendously good feedback about my support staff. They just say they're kind, they listened, they greeted me with a smile and a kind word. And so I try and make every client feel heard, valued, attended to on a timely basis. And I want to treat them the way I would expect to be treated in any kind of service industry. And so I think most of my referrals come from old clients. Oh, I was going to say another big portion of my cases come from attorney referrals. So other attorneys in the community refer me cases. And sometimes it's the really complex litigation that they're not able to handle, that need several people, support staff, and more infrastructure than maybe a solo is able to handle. So I get a lot of attorney referrals. So I think my relationships with other attorneys, the relationships are really important. So yeah. I try and build those and maintain those strategic relationships with attorneys and other professionals.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM and case management tool I've been using for years to manage my practice. If you're feeling swamped trying to keep track of cases and clients, but you don't want to pay the hefty price tag of something like Salesforce or other legal-specific tools, I recommend you give Daylight a look. Daylight helps me prioritize my day. It helps me keep track of my clients, cases, documents, emails, calendars, to-dos, and reminders all in one place. The case management part of Daylight makes it really easy to organize all the details and work for each case so things are done on time. The best part of Daylight is that it lets you work offline. You don't need an internet connection to pull up case details or info about a client like with other CRMs and case management tools. And new in Daylight is their Zapier integration, so you can automate things like pulling new leads from a contact form on your website right into Daylight. And for techies like me, you know that integration with tools like Zapier is really fundamental to making something like Daylight work the way you want it to work. So to learn how Daylight can help you grow your practice, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first month subscription. That's Daylight by Market Circle. The legal environment is more competitive than ever, and small law firms are feeling the pinch. With over 1.3 million attorneys in the United States and counting, it can be hard to stand out from the crowd. And that's why Spotlight Branding helps lawyers become unforgettable. Spotlight Branding is a different kind of internet marketing company. They don't put their clients on the SEO hamster wheel, and they don't ask them to burn thousands of dollars on speculative pay-per-click advertising. Instead, they're focused on the fundamentals of legal marketing that have worked for dozens upon dozens of years. They use the internet to build a premium brand for solo and small firm lawyers like myself, and they put systems in place to create top-of-mind awareness, allowing their clients to maximize the referrals and repeat business. It's the smart way to grow your law firm. To get more information, visit spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur, and receive a special gift from our friends there at Spotlight Branding. Spotlight Branding, helping lawyers become unforgettable. Support for today's episode comes from Ruby Receptionists, dedicated to helping you grow your practice one happy caller at a time. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby's live remote receptionists create an exceptional experience for your callers by answering calls live with your custom greeting, delighting callers in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, collecting new client intake, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. For 15 years, Ruby has been turning rings into relationships. For more information, call 844-895-7829 or visit callruby.com/lawentrepreneur. And that answers the question that you don't have to do traditional marketing as we understand it, or as most people think they understand it. That really a key to building a successful practice oftentimes is just, you know, cultivating relationships, whether they be with clients, past clients, or, you know, other attorneys. And people go about that in a variety of ways. And now you've already touched upon the fact, and we've kind of, you know, tiptoed around this area a couple of times about client service and the office environment and the climate that you try and create. And it's interesting because I wanted to reach out to you because I read, our audience doesn't know yet, but you also write for the Daily Record in the column called Generation JD, which I find is interesting. It's for young lawyers by young lawyers. And I think that's great. Rules me out. but
I thought it ruled me out, but apparently not.
But you wrote a column called Culture Eats Strategy for Breakfast. And in that column, you talked about a lot of these issues, about creating an environment in your firm that is a culture that you think fosters pride in the product and pride in your employees and respect for your clients. And I got to tell you, in the family law world, that's not always easy to do, or nor is it done often. So talk to us a little bit about, in your office, what aside from making, you know, your clients feel like they always have somebody can talk to and they can return their phone calls, what else do you do to create that positive culture?
Well, one thing that I said in the article, and I'll stick to it, even though it sounds self-deprecating, is that I'm selfish. Yeah. And so I want to create an environment that I like. I love my office. I designed it to my specifications, to be honest with you. I mean,
well, why not do that? If you're your own boss, if you're own your own business, you know, why not design the practice the way you want to see it run?
It's interesting. My office yesterday, and I can touch on this in a bit if you like, but yesterday my office closed for the afternoon and we did some personality assessments and a team building exercise. And one of the things that said that stuck out to me about me is that I am very interested in ideas and I want to reinvent old ways of doing things.
Interesting.
And I used to be on my church governance council and we got a new minister from Texas. And he came in one day and met with the board that essentially ran the administration of the church. And he said, I think when you say in any organization, that's not how we do things around here, then the organization is, you know, needs to rethink some things. Yeah.
Dying on the vine.
So I basically tried to, you know, I did reinvent the wheel. That's what although, you know, I'm not going to pretend what I made was, you know, the new wheel. But what I did when I started the firm, even though I came from a place that was successful and ran well, I was open to reinventing every possible aspect of how things were done. And I tried completely new things in every which way I could think of with an open mind to see what worked best. And from the physical space to the technology to every feature that I could think of, to just say, is this the best way we can do it, or is there a better way? And I'm not going to be afraid to try things, and I'm not going to be afraid to fail.
Well, I think that's the recipe for success, obviously. You know, I'm going to share with you, you talk about the you know, personality assessments. In a previous life, when I worked for the, you know, technology world and it was a manager and program manager for software developer. Our company brought in an outside consultant to do personality evaluations on the whole team to try and get a better insight of how we could work together and what have you. And to this day, I remember the quote about me, and they presented this in front of the entire team, which I thought was kind of a mistake. But the quote about me was, he's a country club manager. And that was supposed to be kind of a criticism, in that, you know, I was more interested in seeing that people had a good time at work than maybe getting the job done. And I thought about that over the years. And, you know, initially I was annoyed by that. But in the end, I think, no, that's exactly right. I'd much prefer to have an environment, a work environment, that I can enjoy and feel comfortable in, rather than, you know, the opposite. And you've taken that approach and used that to really develop your firm.
I think that's right. And I think that I do care deeply about everyone here being happy to the extent that I can do something to change something in their work environment, to make it work better for them, to make them happier, to meet a need, then I'm always willing to consider that. And I try and check in with people frequently and say, is this working for you? And when I do employee reviews, I say, don't take this as an opportunity to have me critique you. Don't be nervous about this. What I want to know is, are you getting what you need to be successful? Is there something that I could be doing as your manager that would be better, that would help you be more successful? What is it that you're not getting? Is there anything that I can do to improve?
And I think slowly in the business world, and particularly with small law firms, solo and small firms like ours, that you're seeing more and more recognition of that. And something as simple as telecommuting or working from home. You know, when I first went to work in the legal practice, it was much more difficult to do technology-wise, but B, it just flew in the face of traditional views about how to run a law practice. And now I can't think of a single person who I've interviewed on this program who has a successful solo or small firm practice who doesn't use telecommunication, you know, working from home in a big way.
Mm-hmm. And I offer that to my employees. And to be honest with you, very few of them take me up on it because they like being here.
Yeah.
And I love that. So everybody's really underutilized that because I think they find the office here to be comfortable and easy to work in. I've had my employees, I've had three of them, not at the same time, but they bring their dogs in. I have a casual dress policy. I am not one for suits. It just doesn't suit me.
Yeah, yeah,
no pun intended.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty, you know, easygoing around here. I mean, we have a couch in the middle of the office and I'm the first person to read some discovery curled up on the couch with a blanket, and I wear slippers around the office and I say, you know, if it makes you more comfortable, do it. And I think that just these little things make it a happier place to be, and it makes the work product better.
How do you view the clients, what their perspective is of that? Because, you know, when I started, there was the feeling that you had to make a certain presentation in terms of your office and how it needed to look to convey the fact that you were a legal professional. And that if you didn't have that, potential clients would view you as being less than professional. Do you see any conflict there, or is it just the opposite?
Well, it's interesting. I'm fascinated by this question because I had my original space and then I acquired the upstairs and now I acquired the next door office and I'm currently doing a build out. And I hired a fancy architect, unbeknownst to me. They're quite fancy. Didn't mean to do that, but they were giving me all kinds of fancy, you know, the glass doors, the tinted glass, the whatever. And I was pricing out all these expensive features in the office. And I can't remember who it was. It could have been, I think it was a friend of mine that owns a business. And she said, you know, watch your overhead. Do you need it? And that sort of thing. And I thought to myself, to what extent do I need the fancy, fancy presentation? I mean, my office looks nice. I got beautiful art because I love it. And I think it's relaxing and nice to look at when you're going through a difficult time. So I'm not going to say my office is, you know, the pits or anything. But I thought, do I need the fancy glass doors? Do I need, you know, all the bells and whistles? And I thought, you know, when somebody calls me and speaks to me briefly on the phone to set an appointment or to tell me briefly about their case, they most of the time decide to come in unless they decide the fees are more than they can pay. And when somebody comes in for an initial consultation, if they're choosing between me and another attorney, almost 100% of the time, they choose me. And so or the other attorney in my office, whoever that may be that they met with. So I thought, clearly my less fancy office isn't hurting my bottom line.
Yeah. And I think to some extent it has something to do with the type of law that you practice. If you're practicing corporate law, you know, there may be a higher premium on having that image. But, you know, for family law, sometimes comfort, you know, and a pleasant environment for those types of clients is more important. We had one attorney on the show at one time who has a daycare in their office as one office space dedicated to either the care of her employees' children or that of clients when they come in to speak. Mm-hmm. And so that just shows a recognition and a comfort level, I think, for your customers and your clients and your employees that is important to keep in mind.
And that's something I would love to do in the future if the space provides and they have the staff that require it. And that's something that I really have given a lot of thought to, because we have several parents here. When I had my son and I was working here when I had my second child, I brought him in, and that was a luxury. That was a luxury for me because I had the ability to do it, but I try and provide for other people in this office the same things that I have.
Yeah.
I never want to have things, you know, a nicer computer or a nicer desk or whatever. I don't want to have different and better things than what everybody else has.
You know, that creates that kind of community in the office that, as you said, that makes it comfortable.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Jessica, listen, we could spend a lot of time talking about this. I'd love to kind of pick your brain a little bit. Maybe we'll explore that idea of the nursery in the office at some point together. But tell our audience if they want to follow up with you. We're going to include a link to your article in the show notes. But if they want to follow up with you about anything, what's the best way to reach out to you?
So I tweet at Markham Legal. And I blog for the Daily Record, and I also have a blog on my website. My website is markhamlegal.com.
Okay, well, we'll again put all of that in the show notes. And I want to thank you ever so much for being with us today. And I look forward to continuing to chat with you down the line.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Once again, I'd like to thank our sponsors for today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur, Ruby Receptionists. They, along with our old friends at Spotlight Branding, as well as Market Circle, the makers of Daylight, are the ones that make this podcast possible, and for them, I am very grateful. So please be sure to visit their websites. You can find the locations in the show notes for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. Or you can go to our website, thelawentrepreneur.com, and navigate to the resources page, and there you can find a way to get to each of their websites. So please visit their websites, sign on as clients. I'm a client now of all three, and I think you'll be happy you did so. So that's Ruby Receptionists, Spotlight Branding, and Market Circle, the makers of Daylight.